The Peter B. Collins Show rolls on. While I'm on vacation, I've left you in the capable hands of Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Once again, here's Bradness.
That's for sure. Getting hot in Washington, D.C. as well. We're going to speak with Bob Furtick, who's agreed to jump in for the currently detained David Swanson. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, we're going to begin our daily election integrity hour early. Ow. Oh. Every time I say election integrity, something blows my head off. Don't know if you heard that out there, but I did. Anyway, election integrity hour begins early today, so alert the neighbors, wake the chillin'. We got an exclusive report at the bottom of this hour from John Washburn on some forgeries and ballot box stuffing in Milwaukee in 2004 during the presidential election. Go figure. Who'd have thunk it? Give us a call, by the way, at 888-5-PETER-B. We are trying to take as many as we can to allow you to be the broadcast media. All right, well, it's getting hot indeed in Washington, D.C., and Cindy Sheehan, David Swanson, Reverend Yearwood, and a whole bunch of other folks have showed up today at John Conyers' office demanding that he begin impeachment proceedings at the very least against Dick Cheney. And they had vowed to stay put in his office until they were Conyers agreed to begin impeachment hearings or until they were arrested. Well, it turns out it appears to have been the latter, I'm sorry to say. But we will find out exactly what's going on from our next guest, Bob Furtick of Democrats.com. Oh, Bob, welcome to the PBC show.
Good afternoon.
How are you, sir?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. Are you in Washington, D.C.?
No, I'm not. I'm in a secret, undisclosed location.
Ah, smartly done. Are you in touch with our friend David Swanson and Cindy Sheehan and those folks?
Well, they're sending messages out via carrier pigeon.
I see. And you are receiving them, are you?
Yes, but they're a little slow in coming. I'm a few hours behind, I'm afraid.
Okay, well, what's the latest report then that we have? And I think you had posted posted updates both at Democrats.com and at AfterDowningStreet.org, correct?
Yes, that's the last I heard before they disappeared them. I think they're en route to Gitmo, but I'm still waiting for that carrier pigeon.
And I still wish you were joking. What's the what's the latest word? They showed up there today. Was John Conyers in the house?
Yes, they marched from Arlington National Cemetery. 200 to 300 people marched with Cindy and with David Swanson and with Reverend Lennox Yearwood and with Ray McGovern and a bunch of other outstanding anti-war and pro-impeachment leaders. And they marched all the way to the Capitol and marched into Representative John Conyers' office.
And their demand was specifically what?
They want Representative Conyers to begin impeachment hearings. He's the chairman of the Judiciary Committee. It's on his word alone that those hearings could begin. We know that in his heart he supports impeachment, but he's held back ever since Nancy Pelosi declared that impeachment was off the table before the 2006 election.
Yeah, and he said over the weekend to some supporters out at a PDA, Progressive Democrats of America event out in San Diego, he said, what are we waiting for? Let's take these two guys out. Is that not enough for you, Bob Furtick?
Well, that's, you know, great rhetoric, but it's, you know, it's the action speaks louder than words. And the action we're looking for is impeachment. And we haven't started any hearings on the bill that Representative Dennis Kucinich introduced, H.Res. 333, which has 14 sponsors, which are three articles of impeachment for Dick Cheney. We're waiting for action.
And he did say, Conyers, I believe, at this meeting, confirmed from a couple of folks, that if he only received three more members of Congress signed on to that resolution of Kucinich's, that he would then begin impeachment hearings. Do you believe him?
Well, that's why we were so excited today and so optimistic when the marcher set off for his office, and we hoped that he would, amplify that. But instead, he said there's no recourse but elections after an 80-minute meeting with Cindy and with Reverend Yearwood and with Ray McGovern.
Wait, that's what he said today, that our recourse is elections?
The only recourse is elections. That's what he said in terms of regime change.
And this would seem to be in direct contradiction to his statements that let's take these guys out and that he would begin impeachment proceedings.
Exactly.
What do you make of this? I mean, I know that you have spoken with folks in Conyers' office for years, that you've worked with them at various times on prior to November 06, when Conyers put out a report on how Bush had pretty much shredded the Constitution on so many points. How do you explain what appears to be, and I'm trying to make sense of this myself, Bob, but how do you explain what appears to be a change of heart, I guess?
Well, it's pretty simple. It's all about the 2008 election. And there is a consensus among the Democrats, starting with Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid, that they're on a steady course towards victory, and that anything radical they might do, like impeachment, would throw them off that course. So that's, what they're just biding their time until 2008, till the 2008 election, and what they hope will be the election of a Democratic president.
I have been able to make, and I'd like to see what you think of this, Bob, I've been able to make some sense out of Nancy Pelosi saying that impeachment is off the table. I think that there is actually a certain sense to that, given that she, frankly, is in line to take the presidency if both Bush and Cheney are removed. It might be smart politically to say, I have no interest in impeachment. It's off the table. I'm not interested. And then let the forces that be, whether it be Conyers or the people or someone else in Congress, move forward in such a way that she has no choice, so she can't be seen as herself making a massive power grab. So on that level, on the political level, does that make sense, or am I giving her too much credit here?
Well, she's only next in line under the circumstance where the president and vice president immediately left office, which isn't what would happen under any foreseeable scenario. The scenario, the plan we're recommending is to impeach Cheney first, and that creates a situation much like when Spiro Agnew resigned in 1972, which left a vacancy in the vice president's office. And under the Constitution, the president nominates a vice president, and the Congress has to approve by majority vote. So we would like to see Dick Cheney removed from office, and then Bush would have to nominate somebody. In that situation, Congress has tremendous leverage. There's no automatic succession there. It's a nomination. But Congress can insist on a unifying figure, somebody like Gerald Ford. So that's what we would be asking for.
To take Cheney's place before then moving on to Bush.
Well, that's right. Then we would expect to remove Bush in turn, but we would have his successor lined up, and it wouldn't be Nancy Pelosi.
All right.
There's no conflict of interest in any, realistic scenario.
Okay. GWN over in the bradblog.com open thread, and you can take part in that by going to bradblog.com. Click on the top item, the comments for the top item. GWN feels that Conyers has copped out again here, and we have, maybe a similar call. Let's go to Laird in Eureka. Laird, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hi, Brad. We talked last week, and I said that impeachment was going to be a problem because of the court. Now, I won't dwell on that anymore. I wrote you a letter.
Well, and actually, let me hit that, Laird, because we didn't really get to touch it last week. But the fact is, impeachment has nothing to do with the courts.
Okay. Can I read you a part of this letter, just one paragraph?
You read it quick. Sure.
I will. If I were in control, I would not allow a bunch of bobblehead Congress people to foil my plans with a trivial thing like impeachment. My opening gambit would be the courts. I would have had a plan in the works years ago for just such an eventuality. I would have barricaded myself behind secrecy and called it executive privilege. I would have stacked the judicial system at all levels in my favor. I would have turned the Attorney General into my personal boy toy. I would have repeatedly removed any military leaders I would not count on in a crunch, replacing them with people I could count on. I would stretch the military itself thin to make it easier to control. I may even send it as far away as possible, like, say, the Gulf of Iran. Finally, I would consolidate financial and corporate power into the hands of a few loyal men, American or not. I would call them my base. I would get the country ready for a second war. Fortunately, I am not in control, yet therein lies the rub.
Yes, and nothing like that could ever happen, Laird.
Oh.
Thank you very thanks much for that call. We're getting reports now. Washington Post is finally picking up on Cindy Sheehan being arrested. Russ Feingold made a statement about censure. I'm going to get Bob Furtick's opinion about that when we come back from this break. Bob Furtick from Democrats.com. Can you hang in there with us for
Absolutely.
A few more minutes? All right. If you got any more updates from David Swanson from his detainee cell in Gitmo or wherever he is, let us know. You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show. I'm your friendly citizen blogger sitting in for Peter B. all week long. We're going to be right back with your calls, 888-5-PETER-B. Let's hear from you right after this.
The Carmel Valley Market is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Carmel Valley residents can now easily access the tradition of service and quality made famous by the Higuera family at the Grove Market in Pacific Grove. The Carmel Valley Market features the finest selection of fresh local fruits and veggies, as well as a full-service old-fashioned meat counter with USDA choice cuts. And don't forget the deli with delicious fresh sandwiches made to order. The Carmel Valley Market is located at 2 Chambers Lane, just behind Wells Fargo in Carmel Valley Village. Let the Carmel Valley Market's professional staff meet all of your grocery needs. Stop by and say hello to Ian and Gary Higuera, members of Charlie's family. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens, he cares.
I am Attorney Sean Mills. Sometimes life does not take the direction that you plan. If you find yourself in need of an honest attorney, call me. I can advise you on both criminal and civil matters. Do not settle for an attorney who simply went to college and law school when you can work with an attorney with significant life experience who uses a common sense approach to everyday legal problems. If you think you need an attorney, I will be glad to offer you a no-obligation consultation and evaluation of your legal issue with no sugarcoating. If you think you have a potential legal issue, it is important that you speak to a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Call me at 831-648-7060. That's 831-648-7060. I am Attorney Sean Mills.
sounds good to me. You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show, speaking with Bob Furtick of Democrats.com, giving us the latest news, being the media, as ever. And, Bob, I want to note that you beat Associated Press once again with your breaking news that Cindy Sheehan has, was Cindy Sheehan herself arrested? Oh, she was.
With the latest figures, 45 others were arrested with her.
Sheehan and 45 others. I'll give Associated Press a bit of credit this time. They lead their story. Anti-war activist Cindy Sheehan on Monday moved another step, actually several thousand of them, towards carrying out her promise to run against House Speaker Pelosi. Sheehan and about 200 other war protesters began walking, although your numbers are more than 200, aren't they?
Yeah, David said they were more like 300.
Okay. And indeed, let's see here, we got a raw story says that she announced she would challenge Democratic House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, Cindy Sheehan would, in the 2008 election. Democrats will not hold this administration accountable, so we have to hold them accountable, she said. And I, for one, will step up to the plate and run against Nancy Pelosi, she told a cheering crowd outside of Conyers' office today on Capitol Hill. Sheehan brought a petition calling for the impeachment of George W. Bush and Dick Cheney. The pro-impeachment organizers gathered more than 1 million signatures for the impeachment petition. However, Sheehan and other activists met with Conyers in his office for nearly 2 hours, after which Conyers told them that there were not enough votes to impeach the president or vice president, and so he did not intend to hold hearings on the impeachment resolution introduced by Kucinich. Bob Furtick, have you done a poll of the Congress members to find out if, in fact, that is true? Do they all they need is a simple majority for impeachment? Am I correct?
Yes, that's right. Democrats have, I think it's 233. They need 218. But, you know, there are many Democrats who are with Bush on issues like Iraq and, you know, wouldn't vote for impeachment. So at this day, it's probably accurate to say that there aren't 218 votes for impeachment. But this, what people need to remember about impeachment is that it's a dynamic process. When Nixon was impeached, there were not a majority of votes for impeachment then when they started the Watergate hearings. In fact, they weren't even called impeachment hearings. It was an investigation of the Watergate break-in. And over time, the evidence that was brought out during those hearings, during that investigation, led to most members of Congress, including many Republicans, feeling that Richard Nixon had to be impeached. That's what we foresee here, is that if hearings were held, impeachment hearings, where they couldn't claim executive privilege, as they're claiming now, but they actually had to show up and defend their actions, that the American people would conclude that they were criminals and that Congress would therefore have to vote impeachment.
And Russ Feingold, Senator from Wisconsin, Democratic Senator from Wisconsin, this weekend said that he would introduce censure resolutions in the Senate. Now, that's really, for now, until articles of impeachment are sent over to the Senate, that's about all the Senate can do. Am I correct, Bob?
Yes, the Senate plays the secondary role in impeachment. The articles of impeachment are the equivalent of indictment, and so the House serves as a grand jury, in effect. And then it goes to trial in the Senate. So censure is all they could do now. We have mixed feelings on censure. For Bill Clinton, censure was the appropriate remedy because he did not commit anything that could be construed as a high crime or misdemeanor, which is the standard for impeachment. But what George Bush has done, lying us to an invasion of Iraq, torture, wiretapping, all of these things are high crimes, and therefore censure is not the appropriate remedy.
Let's take a call on this. Billy from Capitola, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show.
You know, your guys' analysis, Bob and Brad, is correct. The Democrats are making political decisions about this. They hope to skate in easily, you know, because there is no Republican Party anymore. But the last time they made this kind of decision about something important was the Iraq War vote. And, you know, they didn't vote the truth of the matter at that moment. They voted the way the election was going to look to them, that they couldn't stand up to the question of why they didn't support the Bush's war at the time. And look at the result of that.
Well, you're absolutely right. Thanks, Billy, for the call. I got to get out here very shortly. Bob Furtick, it's the fifth anniversary of the Downing Street memos, or the Downing Street meeting, actually, today. You guys were right on that over at afterdowningstreet.org. The bloggers and so forth were right about Scooter Libby, were right about the war, were right about everything. Are we going to be right about impeachment? Is it going to come to pass?
It's tough to say. You know, Cindy really raised the bar today, and all the others who protested and got arrested. Nancy Pelosi and John Conyers now recognize that the majority of Americans are real, take the Constitution seriously. It's not just something to be dealt with. You know, elections are not the only remedy, and as you know better than anybody, our system of elections is unpredictable and often rigged. And we can't rely on elections to as the remedy for a constitutional crisis. That's what impeachment's in the Constitution for.
Bob Furtick, Democrats.com, afterdowningstreet.org. Bob, thanks for jumping in here real quick. We'll keep trying to get David Swanson. One of these days, he'll be out of jail. We'll get it. Appreciate it, Bob.
My pleasure.
All right. Keep up the good work over there. All right. Well, it's a great segue there coming into elections and unpredictable, as Bob Furtick called them. Unpredictable indeed. We're going to talk about what happened in Milwaukee in the 2004 election with John Washburn. Right after this, you're listening to the PBC Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The Osgood Files, sponsored in part by Franklin Templeton Investments. Their unique perspective helps them to see domestic and international markets in a different light. Franklin Templeton Investments gain from their perspective. I'm Charles Osgood. The owner of 40% of a 1,900-acre soybean and corn farm in Illinois was actively engaged in managing that farm, according to documents filed each year with the Agriculture Department, which paid $400,000 in subsidies on his behalf, even though he lived in Florida before he bought the farm in 1995. When I say bought the farm, I do not mean that he bought the other 60% of the farm. I mean that he died in 1995. But those old subsidies just kept on coming. In fact, according to the Government Accountability Office, in a report to be made public tomorrow, the USDA paid out at least $1.1 billion to the estates or companies of farmers who were deceased or otherwise ineligible, without checking to see whether those reports of their active engagement were true. More after this.
Taking care of business at Office Depot.
Ever run out of ink at the wrong time? Office Depot has the solution. Office Depot ink and toner is always low priced, guaranteed. Office Depot has over 500 choices in store and thousands more online, including our own Office Depot brand, which will save you 10%. Plus, get $3 off your next in-store purchase for each empty ink and toner cartridge you bring in, up to 25 per day. Office Depot, taking care of business. Selections vary by location. See store for details.
I'm Rocky Moselle with International Star Registry. Since we were children, we've been told to reach for the stars. It was great advice then. Now it's a great gift. Name a star after someone. For $54 and a call to 800-282-3333, we'll name a star after someone very special to you and send an incredible personalized gift package. The new star name will be recorded in book form in the U.S. Copyright Office. Call the Star Registry, 800-282-3333. That's 800-282-3333 for the hottest gift.
If what the Washington Post says this morning is true, they must be trusting souls over there at the U.S. Department of Agriculture. If somebody files a paper that says Farmer Brown is alive and well and actively engaged, they'll pay any subsidies he's therefore entitled to, when in fact his involvement with the soil may be another thing altogether these days. The USDA field offices defend the practice of routinely paying a farmer's subsidies without fully investigating the claims or establishing whether the farmer has bought the farm in the sense that he's no longer among the living. One Indiana corporation owned entirely by one person never notified the government of that owner's death in 1993 and kept paying its subsidies for a decade. One Alabama farm got $567,000 over 7 years, even though that owner died in 1981. The GAO says making database checks against Social Security lists of deceased recipients would be a simple, cost-effective practice. We'll be hearing a lot more about all this for sure. The Osgood File, Charles Osgood on the CBS Radio Network.
Are you getting... Every Sunday morning at 10, check out Rock Roller Real Estate, America's favorite real estate show. Learn about investing, 1031 exchanges, buying and selling homes, and where the hottest real estate markets are. Rock Roller Real Estate, every Sunday morning at 10. To be a guest, call 408-892-3376. That's 408-892-3376. For more information, stop by our website at rockrollerrealestate.com. Rock Roller Real Estate, Sunday mornings at 10, right here on KRXA 540.
Welcome to Your Solar Future, Saturdays at noon on KRXA 540 AM. Your Solar Future is about the practical, the passion, and the politics of going solar. Listen to Your Solar Future, Saturdays at high noon. Go to YourSolarFuture.com. See the solar videos sent in by folks like you. Save thousands of dollars. Make money as well. You'll see when you go to YourSolarFuture.com.
3, 2, 1.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show, and your humble host is away, but the show must go on. And now, from Houston, here's more from Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com.
And we've got a second one before Ohio even begins. The answer is no. It has been alluded and stated specifically, and I will state it again. Because of the partisan manipulation of Republican Secretary of State Blackwell in this state. Republican. It is that he served as the chair of the Bush-Cheney re-election effort. If we were to go to a sporting event and see one of the teams providing all the referees and umpires, we'd get suspicious. Well, we're suspicious now.
We voted on machines without a paper trail. Whoever brought us those touchscreens ought to go to jail. No more hanging chads, no more democracy. What's lost is lost, we have been had, screwed so thoroughly. Coup d'etat, oh coup d'etat, here we go again. Ohio and Florida, where cheaters go to win. Coup d'etat, oh coup d'etat, no one wants to say. That's two elections in a row. They're laughing all the way.
Perhaps third one on the way would be a better line. This is the Peter B. Collins Show. I'm your friendly guest blogger, Brad Friedman from BradBlog.com, sitting in all week long for the good Peter B. And we've been doing I am Peter B. For those who don't know me, I'm his regular guest on Friday afternoons for an hour, which we call our Election Integrity Hour on the Peter B. Show. And of course, I've hijacked the whole damn show and turned every day into Election Integrity Hour. We've got at least one a day, and usually in the final hour of the show, we're going to start a little bit early, however, today, because we're going to David Enders live from Baghdad, if all goes well. At the end of the next hour. So we wanted to jump in early here with John Washburn, who has broken a pretty extraordinary story, I think, today at exclusively, I should add, over at BradBlog.com. And it wasn't Ohio and it wasn't Florida, but it was, in fact, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, where some shenanigans were found. And John Washburn is a software expert, a turned citizen investigative journalist, like so many of us have had to do. Oh, John, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show.
My pleasure to be here.
Good to have you here. And boy, this is a great story. Going back to 2004, you're just now beginning to look at some of the records from Wisconsin. You live in Wisconsin, correct?
Yes, I live in a northwest suburb of the city of Milwaukee called Germantown.
All right, and John Kerry carried that state just barely in 2004 by just over 11,000 votes. You found some interesting material when you started looking at the votes in Milwaukee, at the records, I should say, of the vote in Milwaukee. Before we explain what it is that you found, how did you come across these records, and why are we here 2 years, 3 years now later, actually looking at these records?
Well, what happened is 2 years ago, in January and February 2005, shortly after the November election. A local reporter named Greg Borowski was finding discrepancies in the, he's the City Hall reporter for the City of Milwaukee, was finding discrepancies in numbers. They just weren't tying out. So basically I was like, hey, I do software testing. I can do process audit. How was this done? I mean, you know, what records were kept, you know, done.
Right.
And Milwaukee wasn't the only place I worked on. I also did a number of other municipalities in the area.
Right.
But to answer your question, why is it 2 years later?
Yeah.
Is because on or about April 1st of 2005, the City of Milwaukee transferred its records to the Joint Task Force investigating possible election fraud for the November 2nd, 2004 election.
Now, who had put together this Joint Task Force in 2005, and who did it comprise?
It was comprised of the Milwaukee County District Attorney, E. Michael McCann, and the Milwaukee Police Department. And then on the federal side, it was U.S. Attorney for Eastern Wisconsin, Stephen Biskubic, and the FBI.
And now, essentially, their look at these claims took these records sort of off the market, so you were not then allowed to get them in your records request?
Exactly. And I wasn't the only one whose records requests were blocked, but yes. Basically, all of us were told these records have been confiscated by the task force and therefore are unavailable. And even if we had them, we wouldn't give them to you because it might compromise the investigation.
Oh, man. And so they hung on to them, excuse me, for how long before you, or when did you actually get these records then, finally?
I finally got them on July 13th, 2007. That's a Friday.
You got them just this month?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And you had requested them originally in 2005?
February 15th, 2005.
Okay. So you got, what do we have, 311 wards in Milwaukee, the city of Milwaukee?
There's 314, but two of them are industrial property, so there's never any voters there.
Okay.
And so they're kind of segregated out. And so and it's 312.
And is the ward essentially the same as a precinct? Okay.
Yeah, the term in Wisconsin is a ward. Everywhere else it's a precinct.
Okay, so you crack these things open. You start out with ward number one.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you find?
Well, there I found that there's three essential pieces of records that are created. Okay. One is the poll tape that the optical scanner takes out. One is the poll list that the people checking in voters have. And then there's another one called the inspector's report, which is kind of a ongoing tally of incidents. It's nothing more than an incident report throughout the day.
And speak up for me as best you can, John. We're having some trouble hearing you. Sing into that phone, sure.
Is that better?
A little bit. Keep doing your best. So we've got paper ballot op scans out there in Milwaukee. The machine, the op scan prints out a report, and the inspectors sign a statement at the end of the day with the number of ballots, essentially, that are counted there, correct?
Yep, and then there's a poll list that basically had that other number, that same number on the back of it, basically with a statement saying, I certify that these are the, you know, I hand out ballots to these people.
Right. Okay. What did you find in the in those records for ward number one?
The very first one I looked at. First off, the signatures on the inspector's report, which are essentially a glorified affidavit that, you know, the record's true and correct.
Right.
Looks to me to be clearly signed by the same hand. You know, so the three inspectors, Judy Doe, Joe Doe.
Yeah.
I believe it's Jane Smith.
Jane Smith is the other inspector. And then it was, yeah.
Samantha Smith is listed as the chief inspector.
The chief inspector. So we've got Jane Smith, Samantha Smith, Judy Doe, and Joe Doe signing off on the inspector's statement at the end of the day, 2004 presidential election in Ward 1. And as you say, we've got the graphic up now over at bradblog.com. You can look at this. I, like you, am no handwriting expert, John Washburn, but it sure looks like the same person wrote all four of these names.
Yeah, my specialty is software testing, but again, my opinion is, boy, it sure looks the same to me.
Yeah, it sure does. And now that was not the only, we'll call it an irregularity. The numbers also did not match up, correct?
Correct. I have three separate numbers.
Okay.
I have one from the poll tape that the optical scanner says it took in 1,219 ballots.
And that's at the end of the day, they print out it says how many it scanned, 1,219.
Correct. And then further down after that statistic is the breakdown number of straight party votes for Republican, Democrat, Green, Libertarian, and Constitution. And then starts at president, works us all the way down to DA.
Right.
And then the second number I have is from the poll list. That's 1,071.
That's the poll book itself, number of people who signed in, right?
Yeah, what you do is on the last page of the poll book, you summarize the numbers.
Okay.
Yeah, so in this case, there's dozens and dozens and dozens of pages, you know, where, you know, someone's name has a little A next to it and was given ballot number, you know, 1,062.
Right. Now, the poll book says 1,071 voters that day at the polling place. The OpScan system, the end-of-day report, says 1,219 ballots were scanned,
and
right?
A poll this one includes military ballots that were received and absentee ballots, because the way Wisconsin works is you ship them out to the local polling place and kind of walk the OpScan ballot through the process.
Okay, so those would be counted then in the OpScan tapes, right?
Yep.
Okay, so but we're seeing about a 200 vote disparity in just this one ward alone, and then you've got the inspector's statement where it says the total number of voters is
981, 33 of whom were absentees, and no provisionals.
And if they added, well, I'm just doing some quick math here, even if they added those numbers in, it does not equal 1,071, as the poll book says. It does not equal 1,219, as the OpScan says.
Correct.
What's the explanation for this that you get from the elections officials, John?
Well, I was able to speak to the current director of the executive director of the Milwaukee Election Commission.
Right.
And in her defense, she was not the director at the time of this election. She didn't start until July 2005.
Right.
There were two others before her. So,
okay. So she was not there. It's not her fault.
Yeah, and she has no explanation, but she has, you know, assured me that, you know, they have cleaned up their process. They're much more diligent about making sure that the paperwork filled out, ties out, things like that. But,
well, how about the process of making sure that Joe Doe, Judy Doe, and Jane Smith? I mean, did she have any comment on this at all? This is not the way it's supposed to happen.
No, it's not the way it's supposed to happen. She did acknowledge that. But she's also been out of town at several conferences. And so it was when she was back in, she was just trying to get my records request satisfied, because the reason why I even got the records is because I sued for them.
You had to file a lawsuit?
Yes.
Oh, man. And what's the disposition of the lawsuit at this point?
It is currently in the final stages of being settled, and essentially in exchange for not asking for any monetary damages or court costs. They would cough up the records by July 13th.
Okay. Well, listen, we're going to come back to this a little bit more after the break. We're also going to take some calls. If you're on the line, hang on. We're going to get to you. Give us a shout. We do have some lines open, 888-5-PETER-B. I'm going to ask John Washburn who this affected, this apparent ballot box stuffing and forgeries in the poll books in Milwaukee's 2004 election. The state went by a slim margin to John Kerry. And so is this someone working for John Kerry? Or is it someone working for George W. Bush? Or does it matter? We're going to find out when we come back with John Washburn here on our Election Integrity Hour, splitting it up over two here. On the Peter B. Collins Show, I'm your friendly guest. I'm not a guest blogger. I'm an actual blogger, but a guest host this week on PBC's show. Give us a shout. We'd love to hear from you. I'm Brad Friedman. We're back for more right after this.
Attention all KRXA listeners. Are you worried about not having enough money for a truly comfortable retirement? Were you aware that you've had the ability to buy real estate within your individual retirement account without government penalty since 1974? Bet you didn't know that. Only 2% of the U.S. population is even aware of the law. If your IRA had been invested in California real estate 20 years ago, you'd be a multimillionaire today. The Retirement Specialist will show you how to purchase California property right inside your IRA. They've helped nearly 10,000 people in the last four decades achieve their retirement goals by rolling over their IRAs and 401ks into profitable California real estate. Give them a call at 831-794-8485 to learn more about this underutilized retirement investment. That's 831-794-8485. If you want to achieve financial independence by the time you retire, then call now. There's nothing to lose, only valuable knowledge to gain. Call 831-794-8485 and ask for the retirement specialist.
I'm getting a catcher's mitt.
I'm getting ice skates.
I'm getting a jigsaw puzzle.
I'm getting dying coral reefs.
A blue bicycle.
A walkie-talkie. I'm getting a severe drought.
Cool black skateboard.
I'm getting melted ice caps.
A killer heat wave. A shrinking glacier. I'm getting a devastating flood.
Adults are generous. We're even giving kids global warming. But it's not too late. We can still reduce greenhouse gas pollution. Go to fightglobalwarming.com. Brought to you by Environmental Defense, the Robertson Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Tomorrow Matters, the premier local radio program for matching the global problems of today with the solutions for a better tomorrow. Hosted by me, Deborah Lindsay, Monday to Friday, 2 to 3 p.m. I'll bring in the guests, and you call in with your questions and ideas, and we'll collectively work to set the standards for a more sustainable future. And we're doing it five times a week. Join me, Deborah Lindsay, right here on KRXA 540 a.m. for Tomorrow Matters, weekdays at 2, because for all of us, tomorrow really matters.
All right, taking a look at traffic, and good afternoon to you folks. Let's look at Monterey County, Highway 68 at Laurel's Grade. We have the traffic lights not working, so we need to report that. And what we're going to tell you about is we're going to mention that the left turn lane is stuck on red, so you can expect delays traveling there. Of course, you got to treat that as a four-way stop regardless. Marina, northbound 1 before 1st Street, we have, get ready for this, a mattress between the two right lanes, traffic having to swerve around at this point, and it is creating a bit of a problem. Santa Cruz, northbound 1 at Emmeline, the off-ramp still shut down for long-term road work. That's 24 hours a day. Northbound, southbound 17, looking pretty good at this point. No problems to report. The support is brought to you by Great America. Right now, it's twice the fun at Great America. You can pay once and visit twice. Purchase a full-price ticket and enjoy a day of fun. Then come back another day of the season for free only at Great America. That's traffic on KRXA.
Getting up and standing up for your rights. You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show. Your friendly guest host, citizen investigative journalist, blogger Brad Friedman of bradblog.com, sitting in for Peter B. We're speaking with another citizen investigative journalist at this point, John Washburn from Milwaukee, who's discovered some, we will call them anomalies to be kind, but what he has found is that In the public records that he's finally been allowed to see, 3 years now after the 2004 presidential election, what do you know? The first ward he looked at in Milwaukee, where John Kerry actually won by 11,000 votes, he finds appear to be forged signatures from my eyes, and numbers that simply don't match up, indicating someone has been stuffing the ballot box. They used paper ballots out there, right?
Yes, they do. Whether it is ballot box stuffing, don't know yet. I mean, that would seem to be the simplest solution to the question. But I still have. I want to look at the poll books. You know, actually look at the page by page by page. See if it actually adds up to 1,071. And at some point, I'd like to know how many ballots are actually sealed in the ballot bag at this time.
Yeah, and I'd like to. Yeah, will that tell us if we open that ballot bag, we'll find out how many ballots are actually there?
Yep. And at least tell us whether it's 1219, 1071, 981, or some other number.
Okay, and before I ask you who this may or may not have benefited, my question is, there's a U.S. attorney out there, Steve Buscopic. I can never say his name. Buscopic, thank you. One of the U.S. attorneys who I believe was on the USA or on the purge list to be fired by the Department of Justice. And for some reason or another, he ended up not being fired. He was also on this election task force list that was supposed to be looking at this stuff. Any idea how he could have not found something as obvious as this? Or is this something he did not want to find, John Washburn?
Well, I don't know. I can't read his mind. But it does seem to me to be something. How do you miss this is the question I'm asking at this point. I mean, the reason I couldn't look at him is that you were investigating for 2 years.
And it took you
how do you miss this?
And it took you how long to find this situation?
It took me about 5 hours to sort up the 900 pieces of paper I was given, and then that was the first one I looked at, so 6 to 8 hours.
And the task force
was... It literally bubbles to the top, because I had them sorted from 1 to 312.
And the task force was looking at Milwaukee's election specifically, right?
Correct.
Okay, well,
it's a fair question to ask. What? How do you miss this?
Yeah, indeed. And I hope you'll check with Biskupic's office and see if they have a... Have you gotten a call them yet on this?
I have. Basically called the assistant U.S. attorney who's been handling this.
Yeah.
And I've been contacting him off and on since November of 2006 for several reasons related to this. But,
right.
And basically have not gotten a call back yet.
They just won't return your calls at this point?
Yes, but in all fairness, I didn't call them till this afternoon.
Ah, okay.
This morning, so...
Well, stay on this. Please let us know what he has to say for himself. And now we write, as you know, at Brad Blog... myself and a host of guest bloggers and citizens like yourself have been covering this beat since at least 2004. Very rarely do the folks, if ever, at Free Republic, the far, far right-wing, frankly, crazy website, very rarely do they link up to us. Boy, had this story up today.
Really?
They were linked up in about 10 minutes, John.
Clearly it's a nonpartisan issue. I mean
or is it?
You look at these numbers, and just how do you say something didn't go awry?
Well, that's right. But I think what their interest is, the fact that John Kerry won the state by 11,000 votes, did this vote stuffing, apparent ballot box stuffing, did it benefit George Bush or John Kerry, or is there any way to know, John?
I think it's the last option. There's no way to know. Once a ballot hits the ballot box, it's supposed to be and is anonymous.
Is Ward 1 a mainly Democratic precinct?
Yeah, and all of Milwaukee is. It pretty much the city of Milwaukee went 72% Kerry.
Went 72% Kerry.
Yeah.
So is it a safe assumption or irresponsible speculation that if it went for Kerry, that this ballot box must have been stuffed for Kerry?
I think it's irresponsible speculation, but that's certainly the speculation that many people here have.
Let's take a quick call here. We got just a few minutes left before the top of the hour. John from Tucson, Arizona. Is that our friend John Brakey down there?
You bet it is.
Hi, John. How are you, my friend?
Very good. And hi, John. It's been a long time.
Long time. Yeah.
Oh,
hey,
it's
listen,
all the Johns.
The same thing we found that you found.
Yeah, Pima County.
Yes.
Sucked up by an investigation, never to be seen from
again.
Yeah,
man. And, you know, I'm willing to bet you get the provisional roster. And you will not believe the amount of trickery that you'll find that they did. This may be a stack.
Now, John, what did you find down there in Tucson, in Pima County, in this regard? This was with optical scans?
Stuffing, and that was done under the guidance of a guy named Nathan Sproul, who is the sixth largest expense to the Republican National Committee. And by the way, John, I can send you documents where he gave money to the Wisconsin Republican Party.
Are you suggesting that the Republicans were stuffing the box down there in Arizona, John Brakey?
The RNC paid him $8.3 million, and Nathan Sproul knew all about how provisionals work because we are one of the oldest states in the union for doing provisional ballots. We used to call them questionables.
One of the things that has come up, and we've only got a couple of minutes left here, and the other folks stay on the line. Hang on, because we're going to come back after the top of the hour with John, get yet another John, and more election integrity talk here. One of the things we saw in Ohio was you had counties that went strongly for John Kerry, but the speculation is that, well, if you want to hide, malfeasance, put it into a Democratic district, who would know the difference, for example, in Cuyahoga County? If John Kerry won by 400,000 votes, who would notice if he won by 300,000 votes? Could that be what's going on here in Wisconsin, John Washburn?
I don't know. I haven't done enough investigation to answer that one way or the other. I do have the statistic for you. It's 77.7% that ward went for Kerry.
Mm-hmm.
So a little above the city average. But the thing is in Wisconsin we don't have provisionals because we have same-day registration. So mm-hmm. if you're not on the list, you know, step in the other line. You'll get your ballot.
Could it be that these ballots, the reason the OpScan ballot machine said about two or 300 more than everything else, is it possible that they recount it if there's an error in the ballot and they have to rescan it because there's an overvote or something like that? Could that account for it?
The inspector's report doesn't show that they did anything like that. No reports of jams or having to open the box to clear a jam or anything like that.
Well, how about just a regular overvote? There's a warning for an overvote.
It doesn't. It gives you the warning for an overvote in
okay.
the sense that it kicks it back out at you, and then you either feed it back in or get a new one. Didn't see any notes for that.
Mm.
So,
no explanation essentially.
It's far more questions than answers at this point.
And John Brakey down in Tucson, Pima County, did you find literally like we're talking about here ballot box stuffing, or was it people
Absolutely.
Playing with the tap?
And it's very much in line with Cuyahoga County, and from what little we know about what John's uncovering, it looks the same thing there. Okay, and it was about ballot box stuffing, and they don't do it everywhere. It's like for this way. Is that if there was a federal audit, you have to have a stacked precinct. You can hack the rest.
Well, I was going to say, and Ward 1 isn't the only one that's off. The one that's off the most is Ward 44. That's off by like 470 votes.
And does it have a similarly odd signatures at the bottom of the inspection?
No, it does not. That one actually looks like, you know, you kind of expect they all look the same.
John Brakey, you found odd signatures as well?
Oh, my goodness. The poll roster and the signature roster never matched up. We found that in total they added up to the ballots, but they weren't the same.
All right. Thanks, guys. I got to get out here.
Great work.
Thanks to both of you, Johns. John Brakey down there in Pima County, Arizona. John Washburn, great investigative reporting. You can get the details on it over at bradblog.com. John, are you going to follow up for us over there?
Yeah, and we're going to go ahead and post. This is John from Pima. We're going to post on the site some of our stuff and a PowerPoint that will explain all the things we found.
All right, we'll link it up as best we can at bradblog.com. Thanks, John Brakey. John Washburn, you're going to follow up for us?
Yes, I am. As a matter of fact, one of the things I'm planning when I